friends, if you have someone who has been through betrayal trauma, whether you're a therapist or a community member or a churchgoer, you know, someone you know at church or a family member or a friend, do not Wile E. Coyote your friends, okay? Don't do that to those people. If they have fallen off a cliff, do not throw an anvil on them. That's the takeaway from today. Welcome to the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast, your place to reclaim your life after betrayal. My name is Jen Howie.
And I'm Chris Rocha. Hi, friends. Today, Jen and I are going to be talking with you about secondary trauma.
Secondary trauma. I don't know why I sing it, because it's not actually really something to sing about.
It's not lyrical.
Yeah. It can be. If you're creative enough, anything can be lyrical.
If just you're ask Disney princess.
Adam Sandler. Those are very different examples.
So polar opposite. I love it.
Yeah, that's very true. We were talking about secondary trauma. We're like, okay, what is an example of secondary trauma? And we talked about it being like a bruise. You have a bruise and someone comes up in it and they poke you in the place where you had the bruise.
Or you hit your leg on the coffee table, you get a bruise, and then you hit your leg in that same spot on that same coffee table again.
Yeah. Secondary trauma. And then, oh, wait. What about going to the gym? You work out because, well, first of all, I don't go to the gym, but I have had moments where I've exercised enough that my legs felt it, and I tried to go to the bathroom. And every time you go to the bathroom...
Because it feels like someone stabbed you with 1,000 knives in all of your leg muscles.
And secondary you're toilet to trauma, you know.
Sit down the toilet and you're holding on to the seat and crying. Yeah, that would be a secondary trauma. First you work out, then you try to use the restroom.
Yeah.
Secondary trauma.
Thank you. Yeah.
What's another one?
Oh, I don't know. Well, for the point of today, maybe we'll just jump into the real secondary trauma.
Well, we have to talk about Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote. So Wile E. Coyote is constantly trying to get Roadrunner, as you all know, if you were born in the 60s or 70s or 80s even. You'll be familiar with this. And I have this picture of Roadrunner getting away and Coyote splatting on the ground, and then the anvil that he was trying to get Roadrunner with then falls on him. Sing it, Jen.
Secondary trauma.
Yeah. That would be an anvil falling on you after you fell off a cliff would be another example of secondary trauma.
Secondary death. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Well, I am very impressed with Wile E. Coyote's resilience.
His tenacity is bar none.
It is bar none, for sure. Well, today we are talking about secondary trauma, as we've talked about, and it's really in regard to, you know, it. For the sake of this conversation, how well-meaning people just pour out secondary trauma into our lives when we're recovering from betrayal. And the first thing that comes to mind when I'm on this subject, oh, she's apologized for this. And Judy, if you're listening to this, you don't have to keep apologizing for this. But when I was going through the loss of my first husband and him going to prison, in her well-meaningness, Judy said to me, "You are on a grand adventure with Jesus." And that was so hurtful. I'm like, this isn't grand. This is not adventure. This hurts. This is not, you know, it just was right words at the wrong time. And so, so that's an example of kind of what we're talking about today. And we're going to bring up quite a few areas where people can speak secondary trauma into our lives with family members, with, you know, the community, with friendships and you know, clergy and well-meaning therapists and whatnot. You know, a lot of times we will run into some really poor advice and that inadvertently causes some of that. So if you are recovering from betrayal trauma and you've got some people in your life who, you know, you're like, do I reach out to them? Do I not reach out to them? This might be a great way to, this might be a great tool to hand them to help them understand where we have to be careful with our words and how we approach our loved ones. So if you're like, I can't even talk, like, for example, like, more examples of me, hello. But like my mom, like when I was going through everything with my second husband, my mom was so emotional. She could not handle the pain I was going through. And so then put it back on me to manage her emotions. It was too much. It was her, I was trying to explain what I was going through, and that caused secondary trauma to have my mom be an emotional mess that I then had to take care of. And so, you know, I wish I had had a resource like this that I could have handed my mom or handed people who didn't know how to show up mm-hmm. and explain to them the impact that their words had.
Right. So then it's not insult to injury. Yes. Like you said, you're going through a hard time and you're trying to reach out and develop your inner circle, the people that you can trust, and then that didn't work out well. So now you're having to be an emotional support to people that you love and care about where you were the one that was needing that in the first place. So, yeah, which is not necessarily a secondary trauma, but it's definitely it could be, but it's definitely not helpful when you're going through a distressful situation. So, Jen, you introduced me to someone that you found on Instagram who's wonderful, and we highly recommend that you go find her and follow her on Instagram. But her handle on Instagram is Dr. Jill Manning, and so it's Dr. Jill Manning. And she talks about secondary trauma on her Instagram site, and she's got a great list that we thought we'd give her credit for and go over. And we were thinking it would be good to talk about what she's talking about, examples of secondary trauma, and then maybe we can talk about what a better way, what's a good thing to do instead. Yeah, what would be helpful to someone in betrayal trauma instead?
One of the things that she writes on this post that she put on Instagram under number one, she says, family members who blame a betrayed person for the betrayal or who deny it's a problem. I literally had someone tell me once that the reason why my first husband did the things he did was because I wasn't a very good cook. Mm. And that seems really absurd. You know, we sit back, we're like, what? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, my wife doesn't know how to cook, so I'm going to go, yeah, but you look at porn or cheat or whatever.
Right.
They do all the things.
But these are things that people say, like yeah. The stories that you and I have heard. Just this week, I heard, and we'll get into the pastor part of it in just a bit as well, but a pastor, it was a therapist who told a wife, if you would just view pornography with your husband once a month, most of these issues would resolve.
Wow.
A therapist.
Wow.
But we're on family members, so let's stick with that. Chris, you got to keep me in control here. Don't let me rabbit
okay.
trail.
Rein it in. Yeah. Come back, Jen. Come back.
Okay. So family members. So family members who blame and betray a person for the betrayal or who deny it's a problem. Do you know those people? Have you right. heard those stories?
Sure. You know, examples I've heard of is, oh, all guys do that.
Yes.
Or there's nothing wrong with that. Or gosh, that's a great way that, you know, we use to spice up our sex life. That would be the deny it's a problem.
Well,
part.
even people who minimize, let's just say, I'm having private messages over Facebook or Instagram or whatever with my ex-girlfriend, or I chuckle because it's so ridiculous. But yes, people will say, you can do that. That's not a problem. You can have intimate conversations with someone of the opposite sex, you know, and not have those conversations with your wife. But the fact is, if you wouldn't have the conversation in front of your wife, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be having it at all, right?
That's a great, I think that there should be no secrets unless it's Christmas presents or a surprise vacation. There shouldn't be secrets with spouses. Passwords yeah. should be shared. Conversations should be accessible. And one of the best accountability conversations I have heard is there anything that you did while your wife was away that you wouldn't want her to know about? And that, I think that's such a great question. So the statement there was family members who blame the betrayed person. I've heard it said, in fact, I think someone said it to you, Jen, well, if you'd have more sex with your husband, mm-hmm. then he wouldn't have to cheat. Or, and that was your first marriage that was said to you with from a family member. Yeah.
I don't know if that was... If she said that, she's the one that said, if I hadn't have been a cheerleading coach and if I hadn't been a good cook. Yeah, I think she did say that as well. That was actually when we were dating, when I was in high school. She told me that I should be having sex with her son. This is really, you promised you weren't going to let me rabbit trail. And here we are. I'd make rabbit sounds, but rabbits don't really make sounds.
They're just noisy when they eat. Nobody likes those noises.
But yeah, so here's the point. So family members who blame the betrayed person, or the, you know, and or deny it's a problem. What Chris is a way that a family member might be able to show up in those scenarios? What can you give me an example of? So if you're a family member listening. A sister, a mom. What's a way they can show up that is helpful?
You know, you and I just had the opportunity to speak last week to a group of people on this topic, and the thing that comes to mind was something that was in our speech last week, and that is, believe her. Mm. Just listen. You don't have to fix it. You don't have to relate to it. You don't even have to understand it. Just listen to her. She needs a safe space for someone to hear her and even believe her and not try to put this was my go-to all the time. Oh, let me turn that frown upside down for you. Let's look at the bright side. Let's see what's got up to here. You know, oh, you're on a grand adventure, right? we don't need to fix it. That will come, but it's going to take time. Mm. So, and we'd refer you back to episode one of this podcast, mm-hmm. the Betrayal Survival Guide, for steps there to follow along with. But yeah, just listen to her and believe her.
Yeah.
And encourage her, ask her, what do you need or how can I best support you through this?
Yeah, yeah. And
what about you, Jen? What do you think?
Well, I just think, back to what you and people like my sister and Adrian and the people that just allowed space to be there and not didn't have to fix it. I mm-hmm. think as family members or as friends, often we feel like, oh my gosh, I don't know. What do I do with this? I don't know what to do. You do nothing with it.
Mm-hmm.
You just sit in the mud with her and
hold their hand, cry just, with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold them. Just be.
And don't yeah. underestimate the power of just being in someone's presence, occupying the same space and breathing the same air. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly comforting because there's nothing really that can make it better, you know?
Mm-mm.
So if you are a family member, just know that maybe sitting down and just occupying the same space and maybe making her favorite meal, watching a movie that she may want to watch with you, something like that. Creating some normalcy. What does your family normally do? Creating mm-hmm. some normalcy, but not in the sense of denying it, like, oh, we're just going to pretend like we're going to go on as if life is normal, but checking right. in with her, listening to her, checking in with her.
Not minimizing.
Right, right. Like, would you like to, you know... Play cards or whatever like we normally do? No? Okay, what would you like to do? Would you like to watch a movie? All right, let's do that. You know, listen.
Mm-hmm.
Stop yeah. and listen and then act.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the second one on Dr. Jill Manning's list is therapists who are not trained in betrayal trauma and end up doing more harm than good despite having good intentions. I love the way that she worded that, and I can relate with that. So our one of the I've been to therapists over the years, and but someone I know suggested that we create novelty and go to Victoria's Secret and buy lingerie, because apparently my husband was bored and we needed to create novelty and spice things up a little bit.
But was your husband bored?
He was not. And he truly wasn't. We had great intimacy. We had a great life. We have an even better life now, but we had a great relationship. Sex addiction is not a pornography, or sorry, sex addiction is not a sex problem. It's an intimacy disorder. And so that advice, like, you know, you and Dan said, oh my goodness, you never send an addict to Victoria's Secret. But the therapist didn't know that. Mm. He was doing the best he could with what he had. And the thing that I love about this therapist is that the three of us, my husband and the therapist and I, we grew together in this area, because we didn't know that. I just knew, he didn't ask me, how is your intimacy? How is your sex life? How's all that? When he finally did, my husband said, oh, it's great. I have no complaints at all. In fact, I've got nothing but praise for my wife in this area. So
yeah, that's kind of the cause and effect thinking that we were talking about the other day. There is an assumption, there is a cause and effect to some degree, but an assumption was made as to what the cause was, and therefore an assumption was made as to what the resolving the issue looked like in this scenario. Mm-hmm. So more question asking. So if you are a therapist that is listening to this, I highly doubt it. I mean, what therapist is listening to you and I?
You never know, Jen. God works in mysterious
ways.
That's true.
If you are a therapist, listen, anyone really listening to this, understanding that the components of navigating betrayal from sex addiction, it's complicated. So all of us have to move away from this cause and effect thinking. Because we don't know the intricacies that go into the relationship or into the addict's mind or into the betrayed heart's mind as well. So really, it kind of goes back to what we said, number one, stop and just listen. Be curious. Mm-hmm. Ask curious questions about the scenario rather than coming to preconceived conclusions that not only may not be accurate, but might actually cause more harm.
Because secondary in this trauma.
Right, because what this does, secondary trauma, back to the subject at hand. Because what I remember this doing for you is it put it back on you, like, you need to do more of this.
Mm-hmm.
Do more of, if you did this, Chris, then he wouldn't blink. If you did this, he wouldn't blink. And so now
it leads, what's the term, hypersexualizing?
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely what I did. I didn't take my husband to Victoria's Secret, but I went by myself and spent $300 at Victoria's Secret trying to be more.
Right.
And I wasn't the problem. And that's something I do want to highlight real quick, is that, like we said, sex isn't normally the issue. I'm sure in some cases out there it is. You know, there's the sex life is dead, so the husband wanders or goes to pornography. But I think
it's a coping mechanism, though.
Right? So I always say that porn or that sex addiction is a symptom of a deeper problem. The addict is trying to medicate a wound. There's a pain point under there. I'm not worthy. There's insecurities there. Something happened to them. Maybe they were molested as a child, or they were raised in like the perfect, you know, beaver cleaver household, and they can't, they low self-esteem. They can't aspire to that, or I don't know, but there are so many things that cause pain in people's lives. And, or maybe they were introduced at a really young age and there was some imprinting that went on there, and they became simply addicted because pornography is incredibly addictive and available. So, yeah, it's usually not a sex problem.
Yeah. It's a process disorder. You know, mm-hmm. it's a just like gambling. What's other? Oh, I can't think of any other process disorder. Oh, no. Right.
Shopaholics. But, oh, process disorder. Yeah, right. Yeah. Gambling, shopping can be running. People get addicted to running because they get that runner's high. They get the serotonin and the dopamine and they get addicted to that. So they get addicted to the high.
I wish I was addicted to.
To running?
to healthy eating and running.
We'll work on that. We'll put that on our goals. it seems like there's something else there. I guess that's good. We can move on. It'll come up at another point.
Yeah.
So number three, Jen, you want to take that one?
Well, we kind of touched on it for just a moment. Dr. Jill lists clergy on here. So again, the pastor piece of all this, I know that in my first marriage, when I went to my pastor initially, and he really minimized my husband's behavior and just said he needed to pray more and maybe, try a little harder, just rely on Jesus more. And there's this concept of spiritual bypass that you and I talk about. And it's where there is a spiritual component to this for sure. Mm-hmm. But spiritual bypass is when we spiritualize a situation and don't call to action. There's no agency on the betrayer or the addict to really make any changes. And we know that we, not only are we transformed by the renewing of our mind, but we heal by working out our faith. And so we are called to action. So spiritual bypass is when we put out, just pray harder, just try more, and all of that, and without really putting to work any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep. And I did some research on this last week preparing for the talk that we gave, but we can do spiritual bypass with our own selves, and people can do it with us as well. So you mentioned, pray more, memorize more scripture, saying things to ourselves or to others like, God works all things together for good, or... Gosh, what were some of the other examples?
Well, the tricky thing about spiritual bypass is there's actually some truth to it. God absolutely does work all things out for those who love him. 100%.
Sure, but that's not addressing the issue at hand. That's a hope that we have before us.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not practical for right now what needs to be done.
Right.
The actions that need to be taken, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's just bypassing the emotional work that we need to do to grow through our grief.
Mm-hmm. And it's placating the situation. It's like patting someone on the head. Oh, there. Everything's going to be okay. And God's got this.
Yeah.
And he does.
Yeah.
But that's not helping right now. What are the practical, I am in this sphere on this earth. What do I need to do?
Yes.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. She does mention in here too that sometimes clergy or people in the faith community can encourage an individual to forgive prematurely.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that can be a secondary trauma because, forgiveness, yes, we need that. The Bible talks very clearly that we need to forgive. It's a command even. The timing of it matters here, though, because the definition of forgiveness is to release a debt. And we do need to release that debt, but in order to release it, we need to know what the debt is. Mm-hmm. And as you and I know, there's an unthawing process that happens with the addict as he pursues or she pursues their healing. Things are going to be remembered. Things are going to come to the surface as they get vulnerable. They're going to have memories and they're going to connect dots and put things together that they hadn't before. And they're going to remember more. We see it all the time. This is how it goes, the healing process, right? That unthawing. And so, oftentimes ministries or counselors and coaches who are trained in betrayal, trauma, and sex addiction will advise the addict not to disclose any more information for at least 6 months while that healing happens, and then do a therapeutic disclosure. Yeah. At that point, when you know what's going on, I mean, you can forgive in steps. You can forgive for what you already know, but it's a process, right? It's a process.
Definitely. I used to love that I was a quick forgiver. And it was something, I don't know if I would say I admired it about myself, but probably like in my 20s and 30s, I really liked the fact that I forgave like Jesus did and forgave quickly. When I got into my 40s, especially into my late 40s, I really began to understand what forgiveness meant. Mm. And there is the obedience factor of forgiving quickly, but I believe that forgiveness is in layers. Mm-hmm. We forgive what we can when we can. And so, you know, someone might say, you know, sometimes I'll hear a husband say, oh, she just won't forgive me for this or that. Well, she's still in the marriage, so she's forgiven you to some point enough to be in the marriage. And like I said, forgiveness is at layers. So as she continues to process, I think every layer of forgiveness really requires the grief cycle. There's an element of denial. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when we're quick to forgive, like I was, we never, ever get to the anger phase. I always thought anger was a sin. So I just bypassed anger because, you know, don't want to be that girl. And then through this betrayal process, I learned the importance of anger. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
God was angry too. So if I'm not going through a full cycle of grief, the grief cycle, I can't remember what they are, Chris. I don't know if maybe...
Oh, it's like denial and bargaining and then acceptance at the end.
No, anger.
I'm not saying them in order. Yeah.
And often in betrayal, it's all over the place, right? And sometimes you swirl around that entire circle over and over. But here's my point is that forgiveness requires going through the grief cycle. And not just like experiencing. We experience the denial, experience the bargaining, experience the anger.
And then the acceptance
and
is
the
where
acceptance.
I have found that I can say, okay, God, I can release this debt to you.
Yeah.
You can take this.
And think about that. If to release a debt on as an overall big picture, that's great. But when you get into the books, if you're looking at numbers, you get into the books and you look at every discrepancy, you look at every single thing that was managed wrong or done wrong, you're forgiving a whole lot more. And that requires a lot more of us. And so now, as much as I appreciate that girl in her 30s who forgave quickly, I really like this one that's 50, who now understands the depth of forgiveness, because Jesus did a whole lot more than just an overall blanket forgiveness. He felt it all. He saw it all. He took it all. He forgave it all. And that is a sweet, sweet forgiveness that really brings life.
Right, because it's real. I can relate with 30-year-old Jen, because 30-year-old Chris used forgiveness as a coping mechanism, and it honestly wasn't real forgiveness. It was, I'll take the hit for the team. I'll be the doormat. I'll push this down and deny, put my happy face back on and act like nothing ever happened because I wanted peace at all costs.
So it's a protective mechanism.
Wasn't true forgiveness. It was stuffing it down and denying it, not even minimizing it. I ignored offenses against me or other people that I cared about because I just wanted peace at all costs. So it was honestly selfish and not true forgiveness. So true forgiveness is hard. It is hard, and it should be. And also that definition of that forgiveness is about releasing a debt. It's not denying that a debt is owed. There is a debt owed, but it's not necessarily owed to us. It's, you know, honestly, when we sin, we're sinning against each other, but really ultimately we're sinning against the Lord, and he is the one that the debt is owed to.
He does debt collecting. I like that. You're right. So, you know, asking someone to forgive, you just need to forgive them. Again, a little bit of
you're
spiritual.
Right. But when?
Yes, I will. And as I as I take in what he's done, I'll forgive that. And as I take in a little bit more as to how that affected me, I'll take that. And as I take in the fact that it hurt my children, I'll forgive that. And as I take in the fact that our finances have been affected, I'll forgive that. So there's just so much more
after
to it.
After I grieve.
Yeah. So yeah, so there's definitely some secondary trauma that goes with telling someone that mm-hmm. they need to forgive quickly.
So the next one is finding out that a key support person or confidant in your life has breached your confidentiality or broken your trust. So yeah, that would be a key indicator that this is not an inner circle person. And one
secondary
of the things that we...
trauma.
That's a huge secondary trauma. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So one of the things that we talked about last week, you and I, Jen, was developing our inner circle. And mm-hmm. I liked the point that we were talking about, that it's quality with our inner circle, trusted confidants in these situations, not quantity. You may need maybe your therapist, a friend, if you've got a friend that you can trust in, maybe a life coach. You need very few people, maybe 3 to 5, maybe 2. God'll tell you, but we do need people. Maybe your betrayal trauma group. Those are very trustworthy people.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well, because it's such a unique family that you never wanted to belong to, or unique club that you never wanted to belong to.
A language you learned to speak that you never
wanted
to know. Oh
gosh, and just an understanding. Then that's why betrayal groups are so important, because you literally walk into a room or a Zoom meeting where you are fully known. And there are people who are well-meaning, like if you were to share it with someone and they're like, oh my gosh, this is too much, I can't, it's a lot to handle, so I'm just gonna go to my other friend and say, now Jen just told me this, don't tell her I told you this, but she just told mm-hmm. me this, right? Because it's a little heavy for them, they don't know what to do with it. But that does create, when someone's trust has been broken and we go to someone else, even in confidence, and share that with them, that is incredibly painful for that other person, because that is precious, precious territory that she has handed over to you. And if it's too much for you to handle, then you have a responsibility to say, this is really difficult for me. Can I go with you to your therapy appointment? So mm-hmm. you can discuss it and I can be there with you or for you. So if you feel like as a friend or someone that's received this information from someone, that it's too much for you, talk about ways where you might be able to support her in that, whether it be in a group setting, or maybe not even a group setting necessarily, but like in a therapy session. Because offloading the burden that you've just been held to someone else who she has not given you permission to. I know, Chris, I've told you, you can tell my sister and Adrian anything. You know what I mean? Like if I say it to you, you can say it to them. And so I've given you permission. We've described who our safe people are, who you can discuss my stuff with. Mm-hmm. Even in relationship with my husband, we've done that too. there's a couple of people where my husband says, okay, you can tell them anything you want about me. Mm. So we have that in relationship to one another. I know that there are a couple of men who probably know things about me that I don't necessarily want most people knowing. But because I trust them, it gives my husband a place to go and discuss these things. So,
agreeing on, that's something that my husband and I did, was we both agreed on who our inner circle people were going to be that we talked these things over with.
Yeah.
And that increased the trust between my husband and I. So that's a good practice to get into. There was something that you said a minute ago that made me think. Boundaries. If you are a person who has, someone's come to you and said, this is what's happening to me and this is what's happening in my marriage, and you're finding the disclosure of this information too heavy, then friend, we encourage healthy boundaries. Healthy boundaries help us keep love in. So you could tell that friend, I love you and I care about you and I want to come alongside you, but this, I might not be in the best place to know all these details, so I want to be here, but could you maybe give me prayer requests without details?
Wow, good.
Right? Or can I be the person that takes you out to a movie or to go play mini golf or to go have a spa day to take you away from it all? Can I be your personal Calgon? Without the details, because that's really rocking my world, and I don't feel like I am equipped to know all these details. But you know, I'll pray for you as you go to your therapist or you talk to your coach, or you know, or as you join a group and you have these women to talk to. So there are absolutely people out there who are equipped to handle the details. But if you, friend or family member, are not that person, it's okay. It's okay. There are other people out there who can do that for the betrayed spouse. So just wanted to throw that out there.
This episode brought to you by Calgon.
Yes. And by the way, it should probably be mentioned too, Jen has mentioned Adrian a few times, and we are going to have her on the podcast. She is the third leg in our stool of, in this venue, four. Your sister's another person there. But Adrian is a very dear friend, so... some people might be listening and not knowing who Adrienne is, but she is one of our inner circle people who has made a big difference in our lives and our healing.
Another area where one can receive secondary trauma is from community members or friends who drop you. Maybe they just shunned you or walk away. Dan and I have had this experience. Again, very well-meaning people. They just didn't necessarily know what to do with our scenario. And and you can't blame them. They just didn't know what to do. And these are people who, as a result of not knowing what to do, walk away.
Mm-hmm.
They ghost.
They ghost you.
Yeah, they're gone. Incredibly painful secondary trauma that people can experience. And if you are a friend that is struggling with, you know, what to say or what to do, and as a result you just step away, please know that the best thing you can really do if you do not have capacity is to just tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Even when my first husband went to prison, people would walk by me and I knew they make eye contact and then they directly look down.
Mm-hmm.
Most people didn't know what Dan and I were going through, but in my first marriage, everyone knew because it was at the top of the news, right? It is so painful to know that everyone around you may or may not know what's going on and don't say a word. But more painful is the person that you have told that just walks away.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are feeling like I cannot be there for them in this season, simply say, I can't. I'm sorry. I just can't. It goes back to what you were saying, Chris. It's the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Clear is kind.
Clear is unclear, kind.
Unclear is unkind.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Speak the truth with love. Also, what about the mama whose kids, like the parents of their friends, your children's friends have found out and now they won't let their kids come spend the night anymore. Or like, you know, the children are being shunned now as well. Any words of encouragement to that, Mama Jen?
Oh, goodness. This is why we don't tell everyone everything.
Yes.
You know, I had one friend who her husband had cheated and she was like, oh, I'm telling everyone, everyone will know, there will be public humiliation, and it very much backfired, because once the words came out, people were like, well, okay, he's a sex addict, yeah, ew, that means he's a pervert, that means my kids can never go over there, and that was not the case.
No.
That was not the case.
No.
And so you have to be very careful as to who you tell. So, yeah, there is this element of being shunned by people as a result. And if that's the case, all I can say is, sweet friend, I am so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't your tribe.
Yes.
Not for this season. Not for this season. And I'm so sorry the pain you endured. I'm so sorry for the pain your children are enduring as a result of your husband's sexual betrayal. And we talked about forgiveness. Forgiveness really goes not just for our spouse, but a lot of other people as well in this scenario. But they're not your people at this time. So take that information, let it be what it is, and go find your tribe, because there's a lot of other moms out there.
Gosh, yes.
Who won't turn away from you in a time like
this. They
will
turn toward you.
Yeah.
They will turn toward you. Oftentimes, you mentioned the word pervert. This isn't normally the case. My experience has been that when there's sexual addiction going on again, it's a symptom of a deeper problem. And the deeper problem is a pain or a wound that they're trying to medicate. It's not even about the pornography per se. That's just the vehicle that gets them the fix. They're looking for that serotonin and that dopamine hit. And they're looking for the oxytocin. They're looking for that serenity that high brings them, that medicates the pain that they're feeling. So so many times, you know, I look at people, men and women both struggle with this, who have any kind of an addiction, but let's talk about sexual addiction right now, as a wounded soldier. Not a pervert, not a dirty person. That's just the vehicle that they're, that's the drug. That's what gets their brain to release the drug that they want and they think that they need, because they haven't learned healthier ways to get that for themselves. So I look at those people as a wounded soldier. It's a man down or a woman down, and they're army crawling under a barbed wire in the mud with blood all around, right? And they're just trying to get through it to safety. This is a person who needs help, and we can help them. So in regard to being shunned by the community or even by family members, you know, that does break my heart, because both the addict and the betrayed spouse need help and compassion, and they need tools and support. So just wanted to throw that in there.
I like that you brought that up. It's so amazing to listen to. I just like listening to you talk about all this stuff, because you're 100% right. This is an addiction to dopamine. Mm-hmm. This is an addiction to adrenaline. This is addiction to oxytocin. Mm-hmm. All the things that we have naturally in our bodies to help us live our life have now been synthetically introduced. Mm-hmm. And you know as well as I do that If you're craving something sweet and you eat a Snickers bar right before you eat a bowl of strawberries, the strawberries, while they're natural and amazing, they're not going to taste as good because you've put the synthetic piece,
which is like 50
sugar.
Times sweeter.
Right.
It's
and
ridiculous.
And
it's
addictive.
Unnatural.
That's it's its own addiction.
Sure is.
And so thank you for bringing that up, because the addiction is to the chemicals to release so that they don't have to feel what they have to feel to get through some hard things in life. So that was not, you know what? Maybe we'll just go back to what you said, because it was said so much more eloquently.
I thought that was great. And I love it. We're symbiotic sometimes, because I was thinking about imitation sweeteners.
Yeah, good.
Versus somebody was, I was reading a book, or I listened to so many podcasts on this topic, but one of these brilliant people said, in kind, like the artificial sweeteners, that it is nothing compared to what nature provides, that in kind, pornography causes our body to release insane amounts of serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin. And oxytocin, by the way, friends, not as many people are familiar with that one, is the same chemical that is released when a mother is nursing a baby.
It's a bonding,
and
bonding,
it's a bonding
chemical.
Hormone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's released. And so, and it gives you this peace, this feeling of peace and safety and connectedness. And so pornography makes our bodies create this insane amount that is not natural, and it is not sustainable. And while the high is so high, the crash afterwards is horrible. So, you know, I was talking about this with a gal a few weeks ago, and she said, I can't compete with that. I'm just going to throw the towel in and give up. And I said, no. The artificial, the fraud there is awful. It's a high, but it is a horrible crash that lasts for so long. And the only way to fix that is either to heal it or go back to the, like a dog back to the vomit, go back to the thing that caused that reaction in your body. And we're the legitimate, we are the real thing. Your husband or your wife, this is what God intended. And the sustainable, lasting effects that we have when we're emotionally intimate or physically intimate, and we're doing life together, we're being honest, and we're building authenticity and vulnerability in our relationships, that's the real thing. That's the thing that lasts. That's what God intended, and that's where the beauty is. There's no emotional intimacy with pornography. There are none of the other, that the waves of blessing from a relationship with two people pursuing their healing and pursuing the Lord, the benefits are exponential. They're innumerable. And I will just say that the pornography industry cannot compete with that. And there's your mic drop.
I so wish, you said mic drop. I so wish everyone could see Chris's face right now, because she had her head was going side to side and her finger was up. Because yes, that was so beautifully said. Thank you, Chris. Absolutely. One other aspect is the ongoing deception and gaslighting from an unfaithful party. Talk about secondary trauma.
Yeah.
Ongoing gaslighting or deception. And so gaslighting, once again, is that, okay, friends, Chris is tearing up. I'm so exposing you right now.
Never mind. I love
how passionate you are about this. Okay. The ongoing deception and gaslighting. So, you know, whenever someone tries to remove your reality from you, gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
When someone tries to get you to believe something different than what you're experiencing is gaslighting. Trauma is what happens inside of us. No one gets to determine but us what's happening inside of us.
Amen.
So when someone tries to deny you your reality, that's gaslighting. And so my husband and I have had to really work through this, because we'll be like, no, it's this. I'm like, that's your experience, but you cannot deny me mine, or that's gaslighting. And that's the secondary trauma that we can choose to put onto other people or not. So when you try to tell someone, listener or friend of listener, when you try to tell someone that what they're experiencing, when you minimize it or
explain it away
or flat out deny it, yeah, you are literally causing secondary trauma in that person.
Mm-hmm. So the next point and the last point, unless we can think of a few more, is discovering ongoing or additional sexual betrayal after believing that sobriety was established. So there's a relapse that's happened, and the struggling spouse is not disclosing that to his accountability or her accountability partners, or to you as the betrayed spouse. They're keeping it secret and protecting that addiction, and that can create an incredible amount of secondary trauma as well. Now, this is going to be hard to hear, so putting a warning out there. It can also be an incredible part of the healing process if it's handled well. It truly can. There's a tool out there in the interworld, in the internet, called a crash site analysis. And you can Google that and find that form if that would help you or your therapist. But finding out, kind of going back to that crash site as if a plane had crashed, and you find the black box and you listen to the recording and you do a little investigation to see, gosh, where did things go sideways there? Where did we get into a nosedive, or where did he get into a nosedive and relapse with his sexual addiction again? That can be an incredible part of healing. So that aside, though, we're talking about secondary trauma. And so discovering this can be so incredibly hard. So, Jen, what would a wife do if she discovers that her husband has not only relapsed, but maybe even has entered back into that lifestyle again?
She would punch him in the nose.
Oh, that would be a different kind of a secondary trauma. In the nose.
Oh, up your nose with a rubber hose. Do you know what that's from?
No.
Shauna Na.
What?
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Wow.
Anyways, yeah, she'd want to punch him in the nose for sure. I know I did. This has been, for me, the biggest piece of secondary trauma. Mm. Any woman, and I feel like I can say this as a blanket statement. All right. Most women will say it wasn't what he did, it was the fact that he lied.
Yes. I always tell you that there's that. I didn't watch Desperate Housewives very much, but I did catch an episode where Brie, the redhead, I kind of tried it out and it was a little too drama-y for me, so I bailed on it. But I remember Brie, the redhead, saying, "You'll be shocked what I can handle if you're honest with me." That has stuck with me. It made such an impact on me, and that's true.
That's funny. I've never watched that, and I definitely said that to my husband. I can handle a lot, and honestly, most women can. Mm-hmm. We're kind of badass. We can handle a lot. We really can. And so it's the lying, because it's such an intimate crime against the heart. It's so... It's so damaging. Mm-hmm. And part of the injustice... I'm shaking my fist right now.
Yeah,
part of the
injustice... I was Z-snapping earlier, and Jen is like, power to the people right now. If you could fist in the air.
But
yeah.
It's just so maddening, because it is so destructive. When there's been trickle-down disclosure, or when there's been a relapse that wasn't shared.
Can you define trickle-down exposure or disclosure real quick, please?
It's when they share a little bit, just enough to get you off their back. Yeah. Where they tell you just enough to satisfy the suspicion you have, but it turns out there's more. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit more. And it's just, it puts you in a constant state of hypervigilance, which is pumping cortisol and all kinds of crappy hormones into you that aren't meant for long-term use in our body, right? So discovering ongoing sexual behavior that is not agreed upon in the marriage, or is not healthy in the marriage, or sexual coping, while believing they've been sober this whole time, it is absolutely brutal. And I have discovered that there's no way to really, like, I've given people so many analogies. It's like you did this. It's like you did this. And there's no way, there's no analogy to fully explain what that does to the betrayed person.
Especially if they've already worked so hard on their healing process.
Right. But yeah. I will say this, that as painful as that is, and this is why I couldn't do a podcast that didn't involve Jesus. I just couldn't. I thought, okay, maybe we can make this a little bit more broad so that the average, not the average listener, but, you know, someone who isn't a faith necessarily may want to listen to this. And I can't. I just can't take Jesus out of it.
Yeah.
Because this is why Jesus matters. He doesn't do this to him. So in those moments where there has been a discovering of sexual behavior that we agreed would not take place, I have to go to Jesus, because he is the only man that can fulfill every single one of my needs. And in that moment, I need that man, and that man isn't my husband. But Jesus is. And this is what sets him so far apart. This is what changed my faith. His commitment, his love, his truth, his comfort, all these things that Jesus is, when I dive really deep into that, my husband can't even compare to it, and I don't even necessarily need that from him.
Mm-hmm.
So in these moments where I've had that secondary trauma from him, I have learned, it's taken me a long time, but I have learned, I just throw myself so deep into this amazing guy named Jesus, and then I release my husband to go deal with himself, because I can't, otherwise if I don't do that, I will punch my husband in the nose. I do not advocate domestic
we're
abuse.
Kidding. No, we're kidding.
The proverbial nose. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of women out there, their reaction is not anger or reactionary that way. It's grief. It's sadness. It's isolating. It's becoming very small.
Or it's saying, oh, I shouldn't, it's denial of emotions, right? I shouldn't allow myself to feel this way. I'll just put up with it. Like, mm-hmm. not even knowing the divine purpose of their marriage and their place in it. So they forfeit
that divine, forfeit's a great word.
That divine spot that they have in their marriage by allowing and putting
and the divine work that God is doing. Because, friends, I do want to tell you that now I haven't experienced this piece of secondary trauma in my marriage, but Jen, you and Dan have been around this block. And could you share with our listeners a little bit, not to placate, not to cast false hope, but like you've really seen some miracles happen. Like God has used this in your life and in your husband's life and in your marriage. He's done that. He's peeled back that onion to deeper layers with this.
Oh my gosh, yes. And that's why I share it, because I can. Because mm-hmm. I can.
Mm-hmm.
I have so much respect for my husband.
Mm.
But man, there have been so many seasons where I've had the opposite. But I do have respect for him because I watch him. He gets knocked down, and he gets up again. Ain't nothing gonna keep him down. All right,
mm-hmm.
But he does. It's true. It's true. And mm-hmm. he does. And I have so much respect and admiration for that. And even as of late, I have watched him grow into this man that I'm like, holy smokes, who is this guy? I really like him.
Mm-hmm.
I see it too. And what's beautiful about my journey with my husband is that I didn't need him to be all the things, because I put Jesus in the place to be all the things, mm-hmm. which allowed him to do some growth. So now that he's becoming more and more and more like Jesus every day, I'm like, dang, I'm so glad I stayed around. I'm so glad I stayed around for this. I honestly didn't know that it would ever turn into this. But my hope was not on the outcome of my marriage. Mm-hmm. My hope was in Christ. And as a result, I'm watching some really beautiful fruit take place in my marriage. But my hope will always be in Jesus first. He's my number one guy.
Amen.
Number one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how it should be, no matter how great your marriage is. We should all have God in that. And it's not a list of order, right? It's not an order of operations. It's God first, and then everything else. And for both of us, for the husband and the wife, right? So,
yeah.
I love it. I can see that growth as well. I'm just so proud of both of our husbands, because they are really pursuing God hard. And that is just, it's a sight to behold.
Yeah.
What a blessing.
So as we wrap up this podcast of secondary trauma, do you have any thoughts?
I do. I have some closing thoughts here. I have one brace for impact closing thought. Friends, if you have someone who has been through betrayal trauma, whether you're a therapist or a community member or a churchgoer, you know, someone you know at church or a family member or a friend, do not Wile E. Coyote your friends, okay? Don't do that to those people. If they have fallen off a cliff, do not throw an anvil on them. That's the takeaway from today, right? I mean, can we say it any better than that? Bring them a cot instead, possibly some IV fluids, So that would be, that's a little humor for you, but
yeah, I love that. So let's just wrap this up with that.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the importance of being present. Ask inquisitive questions, curious questions, without having preconceived conclusions or answers.
Believe her narrative.
Believe
her.
Yeah.
Help
her
listen.
Help her find a support system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pray for her and ask her what she needs. Does she need a distraction? Does she need help finding a therapist? Does she need a life coach? Does she need a group? What does she need? Again, we'll refer you back to our very first podcast episode, The Betrayal Survival Guide. What does she need from you?
You know, the cool thing, I don't know if I shared this on the podcast, but when my first husband went to prison, the school showed up every Wednesday. This is really cool. All you teachers out there, the teachers would not give my children homework on Wednesday, and someone would order a pizza. So when I went to pick up my kids from school, there would be no homework on that day, and I would have dinner made so that I could go home after work and just be with my two sons.
Oh my goodness.
Talk
and have
about
a pizza party.
Right.
Oh,
and both teachers got together and were like, no homework. And it was just, there are so many different ways we can show up with someone without adding to the trauma they're already going through. Mm-hmm. And if we're not careful, we can fall into any of these categories that we shared today. So with that, thank you, listeners, for tuning in and for being a part of our podcast community. Your support, it's valuable, and we're here to serve you. So remember that healing is a journey. It's not a destination. And as we navigate the path of recovery and transformation together, know that you're never alone. Stay strong, stay hopeful, and keep working toward your brighter and empowered future.
And we haven't mentioned this in a while, but also please leave us a review on the podcast. It really helps other people find us. It changes the algorithm. So it brings us to the top of the cream of the milk, right? It brings us to the top. But it helps other people find the content that they so desperately need. And leave a review, like, subscribe, rate, all of those good things. Please do that for us. That would really help us out a lot. And we really appreciate your help in this ministry.
Yes.
So have a great week, everybody. Until next time.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Betrayal Recovery Transformation Podcast with your hosts, Chris Rocha and Jen Howie. We hope you've been helped and encouraged. If you value the content we shared today, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review. This helps others find the show. Need personalized guidance? Please contact Chris or Jen for transformative coaching. This episode has been brought to you by HealingWithTheHowies.com, WatermarkCoach.com, and with the support of Pure Life Alliance Ministries.